Welcome back, everybody. This is Eric and Chad here with IRAC Veteran 8888. Today, we've got another gun gripe episode for you. All right. We're going to be making some people angry, potentially. So I'm just going to go ahead and prepare you for that. You might recall a video that we did not too long ago called, Is 40 Cal Dead? And we posed the question, is the 40 cal kind of falling out of favor and everything like that? So we thought that we would continue the drudgery there. And we're going to get into, all right, is 308 dead? All right, we got a pretty interesting case to make here. Well, the short answer is no, 308 isn't dead, just like 40 cal isn't dead. But I think if you stick with us in this video, you're going to come away a little bit better informed. And I think you'll understand where the case can be made in both directions. And we're going to dive into those details, and we hope you'll join us for that. Before we get started, I would like to thank our friends at Sonoran Desert Institute for supporting Gun Gripes. They have some amazing gunsmithing programs, wonderful instructors, really great financial incentives. If you're looking for a career in gunsmithing, reloading, firearms technology, they are definitely your go-to group of people. Check them out, Sonoran Desert Institute, SDI, and tell them we sent you. All right, Chad has prepared some data, which you know Chad's a resident data nerd around here. But there's really no easy way to answer this question. 308 obviously isn't dead. It's never going to go away. There are so many firearms chambered in 308, not only on the surplus realm, different military rifles that are still out there, different machine guns. I mean, look, 308's here to stay. So we're not trying to make a case for completely replacing the 308 in your life, right? I mean, who doesn't love a nice FAO or a SCAR or what have you, right? So there's plenty of great guns chambered in 308. I think really what we're getting into, Chad, is kind of the crux of 308 as a long range cartridge compared to 6.5 or something else.
Well, I mean, in recent years, you know, I've been shooting a little bit more long range and just really experimenting with that, you know, and shooting more precision rifles. I took a long range hunting class with my buddy Jonathan Roberts a little while back, and down at Barber Creek, and I got to shoot some guns that were more accurate than I've ever shot in my life. I mean, these are like quarter MOA, like terminus action guns, right? And we're literally shooting golf balls at 1,000 yards, you know? And that was one of the first times where all of the self-teaching that I had been, you know, performing over the past like couple of years leading up to that time, I learned more like in 2 days than I learned in 2 years of trying to teach myself about long range shooting. And it really kind of put a bug in my head about it. And recently we've been getting into 6.5 Creedmoor. Okay. And all of you guys out there, okay, you're like, well, what about the 260 Remington? Well, look, all right, I've never been behind a 260. As odd as that may sound, I have data on 308. I've got data on 6.5 that I have collected myself on the range and using the Kestrel here, the 5700 Elite. And I don't feel right providing speculative data based on someone else's findings for 260. But look, the 260 came out back in 97. It's literally a 308 that's been necked down to the same diameter as the 6.5, 264. And it's a stomping cartridge, you know, but the 6.5 was purpose-built by Hornady, okay, as a long-range, you know, butt-stomping cartridge. And I think when you look at some of the data that we've got here, you'll see that it really does trump the 308 in a lot of different areas, you know, as far as like a long-range cartridge, not only for military applications, but also, you know, in the hunting realm as well, so...
You know, there's a really interesting cartridge out there called 264 Winchester Magnum. Mm-hmm. And basically, if you take a 300 Winchester and neck it down to 6.5, you get a 264 mm-hmm. Magnum Win Mag. All right. Really cool, right? Now, but those guns kind of fell out of favor for whatever reason. I mean, they're still, you know, have their dedicated group of fans, mm-hmm. just like there's a dedicated group of fans for the 260 and what have you. But when you get into the 6.5 Creedmoor and the 6mm Creedmoor, I know the data that we're going to be comparing is 6.5 Creed, but 6.5 Creed really did light a fire under a lot of people that were in long-range shooting because I remember reading articles back in the 90s where these guys would build 20-inch Remington 700s in 308, And they would shoot like maybe 155 grain Lapua Sinars, or they would shoot some of the heavies from Sierra, whatever was available at the time. Maybe some of them would get into like doing some molly coating, you know, really trying to experiment on compressed charges to really find that perfect accuracy node to really figure out what's going to get that pill out. And I remember reading articles where it's like, oh, can you take a 20-inch 308 and get it out to 1,000 yards? Is it possible? And these articles about this. And to think that, like, why was 1,000 somehow like the litmus test for how far you could shoot that? Now, you got to think about 308, right? 308 was always intended to be a battle rifle cartridge, right? You know, 500 meters and in iron sight shooting with oftentimes select fire rifles. Now, at close range, let's say, you know, you're in a gunfight in a military environment and you're a couple hundred yards away from your enemy. 308 is going to have some amazing terminal performance, right? It's going to have a lot of punch, you know, a heck of a big bullet going down through the air there. I mean, a big battle rifle cartridge shooting a big old 30 cal bullet. You know, it is devastating as a, you know, military rifle or as a, you know, and you look at the early years of the Iraq War and guys that were taking M14s out of inventory, putting them into chassis, mounting good, you know, optics mounts on them and good optics and using them for designated marksmanship rifles. Sure, roof to roof fighting in a street corner or whatever, you know, 500 yards and in or something. I mean, not to say that the 30 cal is not a good cartridge that can carry out to longer ranges. Not saying people can't shoot them out to 1,000 or 1,100 or whatever, like this these articles from the 90s, right? But that the standards by which you have to apply to get them to perform that well at those ranges is outside of the bounds of probably A, what the normal person is willing to put in terms of work and effort to make it happen, B, the amount of money that someone's willing to spend on a rig that can be a capable 1,000-yard 308, right? And C, maybe we're just lying to ourselves and that the 308 is a long-range cartridge when really it's not. Why does 1,000 yards have to be this magic litmus test for how long, how far is how far, right? 6.5 Creed completely devastated that narrative because it showed people that, you know, a different way to go about it. And, you know, 6.5 Creed is a great cartridge and it really has some awesome legs. Now, there's a lot of other things I want to talk about, but I want to give Chad a moment because I know he's going to discuss some data. But there are some other awesome things about the 6.5 as a bore diameter that totally beat the pants off of 308. You know, and it's weird because in our minds we're sort of programmed and conditioned to think, oh, well, a 30 cal bullet, it's got more mass, it's larger. Of course, bigger is better, right? Like, you know, it flies reasonably straight. We've got some decent downrange energy. All right, so what could possibly go wrong here, right? It's not quite as black and white, right? The 6.5 is this kind of a magical Goldilocks bore diameter where you get great sectional densities on the bullets. You get good high BCs because of the Spitzer shape and the long bearing surface in the barrel. So there's a lot of cool things to be said about a 6mm or a 6.5 bore rifle. And the terminal effectiveness of a 6.5 bullet, I'm sure Chad can reiterate a little bit here, but is exceptional out to ranges that you would dare not shoot at an animal with a 308 for sure. So you can totally perform humane kills on animals at ranges definitely exceeding what a 308 would be humane to do. Wouldn't you say?
Oh yeah. So like, you know, when I was taking this class, you know, the guys down there, they've successfully taken medium-sized game like white-tailed deer out at, you know, 800-900 yards right there on the range because it was literally a big farm, you know, where they had this range at. And, you know, they were using just normal match-grade projectiles that really aren't designed for hunting applications, but in their testing, I mean, these guys shoot ballistics gel at 600 yards, just to give you an idea of how serious they take data collection and such. But these bullets perform on whitetail just like an expanding projectile would, and they drop them dead in their tracks. You know, now the big benefit of running something like a 6.5 bore, you know, in the Creedmoor over a 308 for that application is probability of hits. All right, that's one of the big things that the military was looking at when they were starting to like swap over a bit on their long range setups, like the old M24 and such. You know, I believe like SOCOM and maybe a couple other entities within the military have started that process within the past few years of swapping guns over to 6.5 Creedmoor over 308, just because of the probability of hits. At 1,000 yards, you know, SOCOM determined that there was like a 50% increase in hit probability, you know, with a 6.5 Creed over the 308. So if you make a small error in calculation as far as your range is concerned or the wind is concerned, you've got a higher probability of getting that round on target with the smaller bore projectile. And the thing is, you know, just not really getting into a super detailed discussion about ballistics, but you know, when you've got a smaller bore, longer projectile, you increase that BC almost exponentially over what a 308 is capable of. And the ballistic coefficient is what helps that projectile really cut through the air and fight the wind, fight, you know, gravity, and get to target flatter and faster and without being affected as much. So that's the benefit that the 6.5 has over the 308 in that particular situation, is that it bunks that wind a lot better. I mean, right here at 1,000 yards, just for example, you know, with a wind speed of 10 miles an hour from 9 o'clock, okay, from left to right, all right, 2.5 mils is your correction with 6.5, 3.5 mils is your correction with 308. So, you know, you've got a lot more room for error right there. But when we look at like terminal performance energy, right, they're literally neck and neck, even though, you know, the 308 that we're comparing here is 175 grain Match King, all right, at 2,600 feet per second out of a 24 inch barrel. The same barrel length, we're pushing a 140 grainer at 2,700 feet per second. So right out of the gate, I mean, at 300 yards, we're neck and neck, just about 1,679 foot pounds of energy on the 308, 1,600 foot pounds of energy on the 6.5. There's no difference in 80 foot pounds of energy. Like a game animal is not going to realize the difference between, you know, a 308 and a 6.5, you know, and the 6.5 in a lot of cases has higher sectional density because of the bullet designs, and that increases the, you know, terminal performance of that given projectile.
Well, the cool thing about the 6.5 too is that that projectile also holds its energy for much longer distance, as, you know, it doesn't shed as much energy. Think about that big 175 grain bullet. It's, for one, it's 30 cal, mm-hmm. So of course it's bigger around. So you have a heavy bullet that is not as long, it's shorter. So that gives you a much, you know, less attractive BC. Mm-hmm. There's something about that 6.5 bore and that 6 mil bore that get into that Goldilocks zone. It's the perfect amount of length and diameter, bearing surface, the ogive shape. I mean, tons of things come into it, right? And you look at, like, the Swedes, right, with the 6.5 by 55, all right? Many would argue, I mean, like the M96 Swedish Mauser, those things are amazing guns. They shoot super flat. Mm-hmm. They're accurate. So the Swedes had this figured out a century ago. It's not like this is anything new, right? Even our own military had it figured out way back when they adopted the 6mm Lee Navy. Mm-hmm. I think the biggest thing is that the Navy couldn't figure out how to appropriately use the guns for any type of a purpose that they felt like it would be used for. But the military had it figured out from day one. Like, they could have took the 6mm Lee Navy and kind of stuck with that concept. Could you imagine, right, the original M1 Garand that they wanted to build for World War II was actually a 10-shot 276 Peterson. So you would have had two extra shots in the magazine on an M1 Garand, and then imagine having a 6mm Lee Navy, maybe not the same cartridge, but some type of small bore, large action, you know, battle round, for instance. Now you're talking an M1 Garand that shoots a 6mm bullet. You got two extra shots. You got a 10-shot magazine, if they would have went with like the 276 Peterson, and you're talking a Garand that you could probably hit targets, you know, no problem at long range, flatter
so
trajectory. And
what everything. Was the what was the issue with that though? That you know, adopting that particular cartridge in the M1 Garand. Well, it was the surplus of M1 ball or M2 ball ammunition and whatnot that was available from previous wars, from the Springfield rifles, the 1903s and such.
Yeah.
So they weren't just going to like throw all that ammo away and put it on the civilian market for sale and spend all that extra money. I mean, let's think about it. It was wartime, right? They were pinching our pennies. So yeah. They just adopted it in 30-06 and went with it, you know.
I think MacArthur pushed back on that a lot. He was look, you know, this is all fine and everything, but look at it. We got 6 billion rounds of M2 sitting over here. Let's move this thing along a little bit. And that's why you have an 8-shot Garand, because the gun was originally supposed to be a 10-shot.
Now,
so cool to think about that. But the military had it right from day one with the 6mm Lee Navy. They just didn't know. I think they just didn't understand how to field it properly. They didn't, you know, maybe they just didn't understand. And honestly, the propellants as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not like they had the propellants available to them back then that we do now.
Yeah.
So it probably didn't perform as good as it probably could have.
Yeah. I'd say, like, thinking back maybe like 20 years or so, you know, before 6.5 Creed really became a thing, all right, and you had Wildcats and such before 97, which that's where the 260 came from, was, you know, Wildcatters were already necking down 308 to various, you know, cartridge or calibers and such, and seeing good performance out of them, and Remington decided to Sammy spec it and make a commercial operation out of it, which was great. But at the time, like the 260, you know, it didn't have the twist rates capable of firing these longer, sleeker projectiles like we see now. The times have changed. You know, there's fast twist 260 barrels available now, and the throats are cut a little bit longer. They're chambered a little bit different so they can accommodate these longer projectiles. But before, you know, you're talking about running like 120s, 125s, 130s, things like that, not the big heavy like 140s, 143s, 147s that we see today, and especially not the VLDs. The VLDs are a super long projectile. They stretch that ogive out to make it super sleek and give that BC, like, you know, a kick in the butt, you know. But the thing is, back then, 20 years ago, you didn't see M14s, M1As, you know, you didn't see FALs and stuff like that, you know, battle rifles chambered in 260. But now, all right, given the advent of 6.5 Creedmoor really gaining a ton of popularity, you start seeing M1As, you know, chambered in 6.5 Creed. You see SCAR barrels, you know, for 6.5 Creed. You see all these other semi-autos, AR-10s and such, all coming out in 6.5 Creedmoor.
And, of course, a myriad of bolt gun options.
Oh, God, yeah. I mean, bolt guns have always been around in these wild cartridges, right? But the semi-auto market is always a little bit late to the party. But, you know, now with the prevalence of these alternate cartridges being available in these real popular platforms, I mean, the 308 still does have a place for sure. But if you can shoot 6.5 Creed, you know, in an auto-loading rifle, you have gained an advantage that, you know, was unheard of 20 years ago, even really 10 years ago. But now I will say that 6.5 Creed, there isn't going to be any surplus ammunition on the market. So you guys with FALs and M14s and such, you want to just blast ammo and just shoot for fun, you're not going to find it. I mean, most of the rounds that are out there are going to be match grade, you know, cartridges, and they're going to carry that same price. I mean, right now we're seeing 6.5 Creed in the $3 to $4 a shot range in most places.
Wow.
Where you can still get surplus 308 for, you know, about a buck a shot. And we're going, like, at the time this video is being filmed, I mean, we're still going through sort of an ammo crisis, right? Availability crisis, because new gun owners, higher demand, the manufacturers can't keep up, so that all raises the prices. So if you want to shoot a lot, of course, 308 is still, you know, what you would want to choose, but for long-range applications, for accuracy potential, for terminal performance on game, you know, using the right projectiles, 6.5 Creed beats the pants off 308 all day long.
100%. Now, all right, so where does that leave us with 308? I think, and this is my humble opinion,
in
of course.
The corner?
No, definitely not in the
corner.
Definitely not in the corner. All right, so, like,
don't be angry at me.
Say that you go and, you go through DSA and you want to pick up a FAL or something. Like, they do their 12-inch FAL pistol.
Mm-hmm.
All right, I'm actually thinking about getting one myself to do a video with, but not only that, but also a way to regulate some of my 30 cal ammo to something like, you know, a 12 or 14 inch FAL, either it's an SBR or a pistol. That's a great handy package. There's lots of power.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So if you run the data, I don't have the data in front of me, but if you were to run the data on a 12 or 14 inch 308 FAL, right, the velocity and power you're getting out of 147 grain ball ammunition, all right, and then you compare that to something like 7.62 by 39 in a 10 inch barrel, okay? Trust me. Way more power than an AK pistol, right? So there is still a very valid reason to have a 30 bore you know, battle rifle or a pistol set up. And same goes for the SCAR, right? Like, I'm about to rebarrel my 20S to 6.5 Creedmoor, but my 17, I'm leaving that sucker in 308 because it shoots 11 daylights out. It's so accurate, and it's handy. And sure, it's great to have a great battle rifle in 30 cal, right? So I'm going to leave my SCAR in 30 cal, but then set my 20S up in 6.5 Creedmoor, right? There are tons of great options, right? Look at the G3s and some of the, like the PTR makes their, you know, various G3 clones. Those things are great, and they do pistol versions, right? So again, you know, maybe a 12-inch barrel, 14-inch barrel, something kind of short, run a folding brace or something like that, or some type of a, you know, stock or something, and have it just nice and short, you know, maybe a red dot, and just use it as like a CQB, close-in, personal protection system. Man, great. There is nothing wrong with 7.62, man. It's great. But what we're arguing is that for long-range shooting, especially in regards to the terminal performance and the overall hit probability, the 6.5s and the 6 mils do very much trump the 30 cal in every way.
Now, I will say, though, like, if you're shooting, if you're hunting in the woods or something like that, and you've got, you know, the probability of possibly shooting through a little bit of brush or something like that, a few little twigs, I'd still go, like, bigger is better. You know, good flat nose, like soft point projectile, just to kind of get through that little bit of brush. Because the only thing with the Spitzer projectiles, and we've seen this in six mils, 6.5s, you know, we've even seen it in 30 cal with Spitzer bullets. The slightest little deviation of that projectile will send it off into the wild blue yonder, and you will not hit your target, even shooting through a little bit of grass or something like that most of the time. And that's been our personal experience, not just conjecture.
But that's an issue that you would run into with 308 as well.
It is.
Because 308 primarily, you know, uses lots of Spitzer bullets. So that's something you can't escape. If you're in some really thick stuff, whether it's jungle fighting, like we've done our brush gun videos, or just hunting in the brush, right? I experienced a very similar situation the other day, shooting my 30-06 with 180 grain bullets. Big, heavy bullet, moving pretty fast. But if it hits the slightest bit of twigs or brush, you're going to miss. So that's something to consider too. I mean, but that comes down to just selecting like the right load and the right tool for the correct job, and choosing your tools correctly. I didn't bring the right tool that day. I was hunting in some thick stuff. I probably should have ran my 9.3 by 62, something that's an absolute bulldozer in the brush, or maybe a 45-70, something with a big, heavy, massive bullet, right? You're not going to take a 45-70, a modern 45-70, and shoot 1,400 yards. But see, the 6.5 Cree can do what that cartridge can't, but that 45-70 can get in the brush and do what the 6.5 Cree can't. So it's always going to be a little bit of a compromise and a trade-off, depending on the task at hand.
Yeah. I'd say too, like from like a reloading perspective, because I've loaded a lot of 308 over the years, and I'm beginning to load a good bit of 6.5 Creed as well. You know, the powders that are available for 6.5 Creed in the bullet ranges that are nominal for that cartridge, I think the powders are probably the best out there, like H4350. You know, as far as like temperature stability goes, I mean, you're talking a powder that, if memory serves, only increases by like maybe 0.2 of a feet per, or foot per second with every degree of increase in temperature. You know, all the way from like, I don't know, 40 degrees all the way up to 120 degrees or something crazy like that. There's some blogs over on, I think, Precision Rifle blog, or some articles over there that go into a lot of detail where these guys have tested all kinds of different powders. Sure. But like Varget is one of the best powders for 308 as far as temperature stability goes, but it doesn't come close really to the stability of like 4350. So the powders that you can get, the case design itself with a 30 degree angle in the shoulder, the length of the neck, the grip of the neck on the projectile, like everything was engineered for precision. I mean, some of the most accurate cartridges, like for bench rest shooting, all use that 30 degree shoulder angle. And that's not accidental. You know, it really puts that powder into a proper position in the case. There is a such thing as like powder and you know, case position sensitivity and things like that. And everything about it is just designed for accuracy. If you start with a super accurate cartridge, then, you know, everything down the line as far as getting the terminal performance up, bullet selection, things like that, is really easy to select. But, you know, take 308, and 308 kind of started out as a battle rifle cartridge, more or less, and it's morphed into like the match rate cartridge that's been used for like high power competitions, you know, not really bench rests, I don't really think, but, you know, long range applications. And, you know, getting back to what we were talking about earlier about shooting long range, right? When we've shot 308 out to range, even like with your SCAR 20 and like my 20 inch and the 24 inch gun, they all seem to fall apart like around 800 to 900 yards. You know, after that, you're kind of getting into that transonic barrier, and like that 175 grain Match King just doesn't like it in our experience. But like with 6.5 Creed, you know, your transonic barrier starts at like over 1,000 yards. And you don't go subsonic until like 1,200 in the 24-inch barrel Vergara that I've tested with the 140s.
We'll have a video coming out on that gun, by the way.
I'm still doing some load development testing with that thing. But it's just from that perspective, from long-range shooting, target shooting, there's just really no comparison with like the Creedmoor family. And like I said, I mean, we're just discussing the 6.5 in this video, but Eric mentioned like the 6 Creedmoor, you know, earlier. And that thing is an absolute laser beam, and I'm sure
it's also a bit of a throat burner.
It is.
So that's the thing, you know, there's no such thing as a free lunch in physics, right? And it's like, you look at start pressures, you look at friction, you look at neck tension. There's all these different things that hand loaders and ammo companies have to consider when not only they're making factory ammo, but when they're loading ammo with their bench or whatever. But the thing is, you know, the 6mm is a fast sucker. I mean, it's got some really great potential. But, you know, you can take that little pill and get it moving really fast with a good case crush and charge of powder, but you're going to get more throat wear. And I've heard of some shooters that are able to get some decent barrel life out of their 6mm Creedmoors, but the general consensus is if you're going to shoot a good volume of ammo and try to get the most life out of a barrel, that the 6.5 Creedmoor is certainly still like the great kind of happy medium there, that you will get probably a little bit shorter barrel life out of the 6mm Creedmoor. It's not a bad thing. It's just something you need to be prepared for.
One of the whole ideas with the barrel life, you know, and throat burning and that sort of thing, the idea is, okay, 308 barrel, for example, all right, it's a wider caliber, correct? So you've got a larger bore, which means more surface area, all right? Just to think about it like this, all right, 6.5, less surface area, right? But you're running roughly the same amount of powder. So same amount of powder burning through a smaller barrel with less surface area, well, it's going to affect the metal a little bit more. 6mm Creedmoor, same kind of thing. You're stepping down in that surface area, still running roughly the same amount of powder, and you're just burning it up, and you're running higher velocities. Once you get up past like that 2,900 feet per second mark, getting up around 3,000 and such, that's when you start wearing, you know, your steel out in your barrels.
Well, in some cases, you might actually be running more powder in the 6mm Creedmoor, because generally, I know it sounds weird. You would think like, all right, given a given cartridge, right, that the heavier the bullet, you would think, oh, well, that uses more powder, right, if it's a heavier bullet. No, the lighter the bullet, the more powder is needed
typically,
on a case-by-case basis. So, like, if I'm loading, let's say, for instance, 110 grain bullet in 308 or alt-6 or something crazy like that, it's going to need a faster powder and more of it, which will translate to, you know, sometimes more pressure, more heat. So those things are just things to consider. We're not necessarily saying it's like a detractor or something to say, oh, well, 6mm Creedmoor is a throat burner. Well, yes, it is, but only mainly by virtue of what Chad just discussed. I would like to add one other thing. To mention what Chad talked about, like the 30 cal and how people started taking 7.62 and it's like, well, this is what we've got. Let's just use it, right? And started using it in like the M14 or for long range applications or in the M24 sniper system as like a sniper round or whatever. The same could also be argued about 50 BMG, right? The 50 BMG was never intended to be a long range shooting cartridge. It was intended to be a machine gun cartridge. And I don't want to get off on this tangent here because it's not really in the scope of this video, but I'll just mention that if you look at the dimensions of 30-06 and the dimensions of 50 BMG, literally all a 50 BMG is a 30-06 scaled up to 50 bore. That's it. All the dimensions are just make it bigger. There it is. All right. Now, would people argue that the 30-06 is a long range you know, master of a cartridge? Well, Carlos Hathcock could probably say a few things about that if he was here. You know, he used a Winchester Model 70 to log in 30-06 to log plenty of kills in Vietnam, right? Now, when we look at the 50 BMG, it was never intended to be, a long range or sniper cartridge. It was always sort of anti-material machine gun cartridge. That's what it was made for, right? So we see the same thing with 50 BMG, where people go, all right, well, you know, the middle intact 50's done a lot of great work. Mm-hmm. Okay, now it's not to say that 50 hasn't been used in some really interesting feats of soldiering and in competition. Mm-hmm. And there's plenty of people that compete with 50s as a bore. You know, they love 50 cal, and that's cool. I love 50 cal too. I've got a 107. I love my 107. All right. And that's not to say that people in combat haven't used 7.62 to some really great effect within the, you know, very, you know, limited circumstances, right? But, all right, now look at 50 BMG. Now let's take this concept. This could probably be a whole nother video, but you could take the same concept and argue that, all right, now you get into the, you know, either not even 416 Barrett, but when you look at 408 Chi-Tac, mm-hmm.
375
Chi-Tac, mm-hmm. you know, now you're talking. All right, you take a 408 Chi-Tac and set it next to a 50 BMG. And what do you see? The same type of thing. The 50 BMG is slow and cumbersome and heavy and doesn't have very good, you know, ballistic coefficient. It's not a long-range cartridge, right? But you look at the 408, that sucker's built for speed. It's a Ferrari, right? All right. Now, is that to say that all the other guns chambered in 50 still don't have a use? Of course they do. But like with Chi-Tac, you know, they really reinvented the wheel on what those guns are capable of with the 408, man.
It is certainly the same concept. I mean, taking, you know, 308, necking it down to 260. You know, taking 308, necking it down to 6mm Wildcats and things like that.
Or taking 50 BMG and necking it down to 416 with the 416 yeah. Barrett.
Well, one of the reasons they did that was to get around the bans and things like that in California.
It was a big FU. You
know, so, but that way, it, you know, Barrett was able to participate in the market in California, you know, with a cartridge that was smaller than 50
bore. To be fair, though, the 416 is a great cartridge.
It does
perform
better.
And many would say that the performance on 416 is arguably way better for long-range shooting than 50 BMG is anyway.
But, you know, like you saw Hornady. All right, this is the same thing I talked about earlier with the 308 and then kind of coming into the modern era with new projectiles and things like that, more sleeker projectiles to really increase the long-range potential of the cartridge. You saw the same thing with 50 BMG. You know, before it was just big old heavy like 750-grain projectiles, 690-grain projectiles, 680s, 650s, things like that. But then you saw like the AMAX from Hornady come out, you know, big, long, sleek, long ogive with a super high BC, big boat tail projectile. Yeah. And, you know, there's still guys that run, you know, 50 BMGs through like Macmillan TAC 50s and custom actions and things like that that are shooting like these King of the 2 Mile competitions and stuff. Now, like the 50's been eclipsed by a lot of the smaller, sleeker, you know, cartridges that throw a little bit lighter projectiles with super high BCs, you know, at stupid velocities and get that bullet out there crazy fast without a lot of deviation in the wind and things like that. But the AMAX really brought the 50 into the modern era, just like, you know, what we're seeing now with 6.5 Creed and such like that. You know, these new cartridges are coming out, new projectile technology, new powder technology, and it's constantly, you know, we're constantly seeing you know, better and better guns come out, better and better ammunition come out, higher performance rounds. And it's interesting to see what we've seen in the past, you know, 20 or more years, just, you know, shooting and things like that and doing what we're doing now. But I'm curious to see what the next, you know, 20 years is going to bring as far as, you know, firearms technology as a whole.
We hope that in this video, I know that we probably
went down some rabbit holes.
We went down a few rabbit holes, but maybe we laid some facts out in a way that you guys can understand where we're trying to come from. We're not saying 7.62 is not worth having. I love 308. I love the 7.62 bore. I think it's here to stay, and I think it's definitely a lot of fun to shoot. But just know that there's some new kids in town when it comes to long-range shooting, and you know, it's worth considering that you have to change your tactics and your level of training, your level of aptitude behind a certain gun or weapon system or whatever you're going to do to meet the change in technology. You know, all right, sure, there's guys that can take a 30 cal and launch it out to 1,000. Hurrah, good for you. But there's guys that can There's someone who's probably never even shot a gun before that can lay behind a 6.5 Creedmoor and with a little bit of basic instruction can put rounds on target without even thinking about it.
Look,
I've witnessed it personally. People have never even shot a bolt gun and say, here, lay behind this. Like, what? Here, put it here. And then they go.
Look, there were students at this long range hunting class that had never shot past 100 yards, and they were shooting golf balls and clay pigeons at 1,000 yards before the day was out.
The equipment and the tactics must evolve with the technology that is available. You don't get left behind. And that's why I'm converting my 20S to 6.5 Creedmoor. So, good day. All right, anyway.
And, like, the entire video was all about that. I was like, oh, well, so that's the reason why I'm converting my 20S to 6.5 Creedmoor. Thanks, guys.
22-inch barrel, I think, is what we're going to run with. Anyway, we'll get on that. But thank you so much for watching today's video. We hope you enjoyed it. Many more videos on the way. Big thank you to all of our Patreon supporters. You guys are amazing. Thank you for being a part of what we do. Go over to Ballistic Ink and pick yourself up a snazzy new t-shirt. We've got beanies, hats, jackets, t-shirts, all kind of cool merch. You can support the channel directly those ways. Thank you very much for being a part of what we do. We hope you enjoyed today's video. Maybe you learned something. Let us know in the comment section below. Did we screw something up? Did we get something wrong? Why do you like 30 cal over 6.5 Creed? Why do you like 6.5 Creed over 30 cal? Go ahead and let the argument commence down below, and we'll break out the popcorn and read a few comments.
260 maybe. For life.
That's right. Have a good one. Many more videos on the way. We'll see you soon.
See you guys.